for our June episode of Diversity Inside Lacrosse with Nation United. Today, we're continuing our discussion around experiences that we've had over our past few episodes. Last month, we had a segment on the parents' perspective. And if you haven't heard it, check it out. Kyle Harrison's father, Miles Harrison, joined us, and he had some very interesting and insightful things to share. And it was just really cool to get a chance to hear the parent of not only one of the top players in lacrosse, but also one of the top players of color in lacrosse today. So following up on that, for our June episode, we're going to cover the player's perspective. And this episode will focus on sharing the voice of high school, college, and post-collegiate players, where they'll discuss their experiences, challenges, and rewards of playing the sport of lacrosse. So to kick this off, I'd like to get started by introducing Mikey Diggs, who is the creator of Diggs Tape, as well as a former D3 lacrosse player at St. Vincent College, who, by the way, had put up some impressive stats while there. He's also generally a content creator, creative person, who does photography in a number of fields. Mikey is a Maryland native, but has resided in San Diego and attended Rancho Bernardo. And Mikey will be jumping on board as our new voice of Nation United, which we're really excited about. As part of this, it will include delivering our State of the Nation updates to you. So as I said, Mikey, we're excited to have you on. Are you there with us?
Yeah, I'm right here. Thanks for having me.
Right on. Thank you for joining us. To kick this off, I'd like to introduce our listeners to you a bit. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. Now, I know you've been involved with lacrosse for a long time. As I just said earlier, not only did you create and do you narrate Diggs Tape, but you also played in college and high school. Can you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about your background and experience with lacrosse?
Sure. So I actually started playing lacrosse a lot like a lot of kids did, transitioning from baseball. So I was playing baseball from when I was about 4 years old up until about fifth or sixth grade. My best friend, Ethan Bodie, we grew up on the same street, and he wanted me to play a sport with him that he just started trying out, which was lacrosse. I had no idea what it was, even though I'm from Maryland. Don't know how that happened. But he and his parents bought me a lacrosse stick for my 11th birthday. So just from that point on, I was hooked and played all through middle school, played high school, made varsity as a freshman, one of three varsity to make the teams. We didn't have a JV. Then went on to college. Now I play pretty competitive men's post-collegiate men's league here in San Diego.
Awesome. Thanks. So we had talked about earlier about something that you did recently with Diggs Tape, and that's that during the inaugural weekend of the Premier Lacrosse League, or PLL, the big news in the sport right now, you began live streaming narration or coverage of the games, and you also did that with some pretty notable players who happen to be Nation United coaches. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the whole, you know, live streaming with a couple of players, it was Chaz Woodson last weekend and Pat Young this weekend, and being a lacrosse fan, just getting a chance to rap with two dudes that I love their game and I look up to them as a fan, and just to get a chance to rap with them and do that kind of stuff was awesome. But how it really started out was it's just a way to connect with other people that like watching lacrosse. You know, other than posting a story to Instagram where people can only reply to me, I wanted to see what it would be like to create a little bit of a space where people can reply to one another. And I can field questions and we can live respond to things. And I just figured maybe it would be a fun, organic way to watch the game with other people. So that's really how it started. And it's become something that's really fun. And I look forward to doing it every once in a while in the future, whether that's, you know, having someone join me or me joining someone else or just talking about the game.
And then that also speaks to, you know, Mikey, why we're on with you today, why I think it's so awesome that you've decided to come on and participate as a voice of Nation United. Because one thing that you do have is a unique, but youthful, exciting, and entertaining way of talking to and about the sport. right? So I'm really excited to introduce that to our listeners. I'm really excited to introduce that to our families. And I'm really excited to have you talking about our ambassadors. So, you know, with that, no further ado, Mikey, I'd like to go ahead and hand the torch over to you. The segment is yours.
Well, Brian, thank you. So thanks guys for tuning in. Just want to jump right into it. I want to talk about the upcoming Nation United events, tournaments, et cetera. So the inaugural All-Nation Men's U19 team is going to be competing out in Vail, at the Vail Lacrosse Shootout, the famed Vail Lacrosse Shootout out in Vail, Colorado. It's going to be June 30th to July 3rd. So if you're at that tournament, make some time to stop in on the U19 team. They're going to be out there balling. Then the 2019 and 2020 Nation United Men's Elite Nation teams, they're going to be competing at the Isle Invitational, Inside Lacrosse Invitational, out in Bel Air, Maryland, July 7th through 10th. So after you're done celebrating 4th of July, you're hitting that tournament, stop by and catch the 2019 and 2020 teams. Then the Nation United Women's High School team is going to be competing out in Placid, Lake Placid Summit Classic. That's a tongue twister. In Lake Placid, New York, that's August 5th through 7th. So if you're at Placid, find our women's high school team and go fly them down, go show your support. Nation United also wants to welcome Charm Nation. It's Baltimore City's regional team. We're welcoming them to the Nation United family as they kick off their inaugural summer. And they're getting right into it. They're going to be competing at the Inside Lacrosse Invitational right alongside the national team. And that is the one in Bel Air, Maryland. So you can go out and support them as well if you're making it to that one. Let's talk about camps real fast. So we got a camp going on this summer. The Nation United Experience is powered by Legends Lacrosse. It's going to be hosted on the campus of Goucher College, July 31st to August 2nd. It's going to be an elite level of instruction in a diverse environment. It's going to be top caliber positional, small group, and full field training sessions with Nation United coaches, PLO pro athletes, Shake Doctor, and Nation United alumni of all ages and levels. And everyone that shows up is going to get a custom Legends gear pack. So if you're a player, you're looking for some dope swag to rock this year, custom Legends gear pack for every player that signs up. So you're going to be able to sign up over at nationunitedlc.com. That's nationunitedlc as in lacrosseclub.com. And moving right into ambassadors highlights, Nation United ambassadors, coaches, and mentors, they've been making a splash on and off the field this season at all levels. With over 175 ambassadors and Nation United mentors actively playing, we can't cover them all in one segment, but I'm going to use Day of the Nation right now to shout out just a couple of you right now and as many as I can each week. So getting right into it, I want to give a quick shout out to the two fine young players that have made the Under Armour Senior All-America game. And that is Cameron Henry from McCallie School. He's headed out to Duke. And Chloe Hunter from the Kincaid School down in Texas. She's headed to UPenn. So congratulations to those two for being named Under Armour All-Americans. Continuing on, I want to shout out two young men that I've been able to interact with personally over the years, whether it's in person here in San Diego or, you know, over the airways of Instagram and on different channels. My man, Sterling Ardrey, he made the all CAA rookie team his first year at Hofstra. 9 points on the year, 7 goals, 2 assists, had a hattie against Providence. Young kids out there balling. Love to see him come up and checking on him since he was over at McCallie as well. Isaiah Dawson, kid from Bishops here in San Diego. He made Ivy League honor roll here this in his freshman year. Finished his freshman year at Harvard with 9 points, 4 goals, 5 assists. So shout out to him for getting it done on the field and in the classroom. Now, Ari Tayan, he ended his sophomore campaign at UNC with 7 goals and 3 assists. Had a hattie against my Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. Kind of salty at you about that, but that's okay. He's currently interning with Hearst Communications. He's an assistant producer, interviewer, and a guest on this episode. So stay tuned to hear a little more from him later. Also want to give a quick shout out to Zenzo Beresford. He earned MAC All Academic Team, MAAC All Academic Team honors in 2019 here in the spring. And right now has an internship with Major League Lacrosse. So he's out there getting it done too. And lastly, we just want to real quick acknowledge our pros that are repping Nation United. Isaiah Davis Allen, Bayhawks player in the MLL, Coach Pat Young, PLL Atlas, Coach Mark McNeil, playing for PLL Archers, and Chaz Woodson, playing for the PLL Redwoods. And another PLL Redwoods player is obviously Kyle Harrison, who's holding us down over there for the Redwoods. Thanks for listening to the State of the Nation segment on our podcast. Now we're going to hear from two rising stars and some insight about their lacrosse journey. Two rising juniors at UNC, Ara Tayan, who is a Nation United alum, plays midfield, and Kayla Wood, a Nation United mentor that plays defense. They're going to have some stuff to talk about, so I'll go ahead and turn it over to them.
What are you kind of driven to become?
I think a lot of people would say, you know, that know me well, would say that I love family. I'm a very family-oriented person. I try to talk to my family at least once a day, and when I'm home from school, I, you know, try to hang out with them as much as I can. Something that I would say I probably strongly dislike is dishonesty. I'm a very, like, upfront person, so I don't really like when, you know, people try to tell me stories or, you know, just aren't completely forthcoming with things. And something that I would dream of is, you know, making an impact on the world or society, whether it's small or big. I just want to do something that helps spark change whatever way I can.
I feel like, yeah, that's exactly you to a T from getting to know you these past 2 years. Is that kind of, are those kind of things that runs through and through in the program and like your experience so far at school?
I would definitely say so. You know, at Carolina, everyone definitely is a big family, and I think that you can always rely on people to be honest with you, and no matter, like, how big or small, like, your dream is, people are willing to hear you out and, you know, give you any kind of feedback that they can about it, and everyone is, like, super supportive, so.
Kind of just turning to, like, how you got to Carolina, can you kind of just tell me a little bit about, like, Catonsville, Maryland, what it's like, what was lacrosse growing up there like, and just, like, some challenges or some of your best moments from those years back home?
Well, before I started playing lacrosse, I actually ran track for a little bit, and I decided to pick up a lacrosse stick because I just kind of wanted to try something different. And my older sister, she started playing, and I loved watching her play. So I figured, you know, that I'd give it a try. And lacrosse in Catonsville is actually, you know, pretty popular. So a lot of my friends were doing it. So, you know, like I said, I decided to give it a try, and I ended up loving it. And I played with most of the girls I played with lacrosse in other sports, like soccer and basketball. And, I mean, it just made me grow closer to them and create, like, really strong bonds with them. Like, when I come back from school, I still go and see my friends from high school or, you know, middle school or people that I played with. So, you know, lacrosse in Catonsville, like I said, is pretty big.
Yeah, that's like, I'd say that's pretty similar to my hometown in New York, Bronxville. It's actually funny you said your sister kind of drew you to the sport because she was playing before you, because that was the same exact thing for me. My sister came back with a flyer, like lacrosse tryouts, and I immediately wanted to get a stick. And kind of looking at what was going on in my town, I feel now, like looking back on it, with hindsight, that I was really fortunate to have a really good youth program and coaches. And, like, what was your experience like with your coaches kind of growing up, and then also just teammates and families and kind of the whole just Catonsville experience prior to North Carolina?
Coaching-wise, like, my first coach of lacrosse was pretty awesome. She was, I didn't really know her, but, you know, once I started playing with her, she was, like, so excited that I was on her team, and she actually really helped me with developing my lacrosse skills, and she always had great things to say about me. And as I got older, you know, I mean, people like network. So she always was saying, you know, like, Kayla does this, Kayla does that. And, you know, she is definitely one of my biggest supporters along with my family. So I'm incredibly grateful to, you know, have the first coach that I had, because I mean, I don't really think that I would have gained as much confidence if I would have had someone else. From my transition to Carolina, I didn't really play club. I played club for probably about, like, a few months or so. I really mostly got, you know, recruited through high school my freshman year when my team went to state. And I think, you know, my journey is a little bit different from a lot of other people's, because usually, you know, people play club for a while and then that's how they get recruited. But, you know, people are always usually surprised to hear my story. And so after, you know, being recruited, I came down to Carolina for a camp, and, you know, that's when everything started. And then I committed my sophomore year.
You talked about how family is super important, and then committing to Carolina sophomore year. What were your kind of expectations going into just school in general, and then also playing in the program as well?
I definitely knew that it was going to be hard. I honestly really didn't know what to expect. I definitely expected, you know, a lot of intensity and a lot of competitive fire. I didn't really know what I was expecting, you know, from the girls, but the program, I mean, has not disappointed me since. It's a pretty, you know, overall, like, happy place. And, you know, it is very challenging some days, and some days can be really hard. But at the end of the day, you know, you lay in your bed at night and you're like, I got better today. And that was one of the main reasons I picked Carolina, was just because I knew that they were going to push me to be my best, you know, no matter what. And they would always, you know, call me out if I wasn't giving it my all. And being there for the past 2 years has really shown me that, you know, if I'm not going to at least, you know, give it my all for myself, I'm going to give it all for my teammates, so that way I can make them better and not only make myself better.
So I got to ask this, because being around you for the past 2 years, and then also because both our teams obviously hang out, can you describe what is, like, the main meaning behind hashtag Yeehaw? And, like, what, how does that feel, you guys?
Oh, wow. I think every year, you know, we have something different. And, you know, this year, that phrase just kind of stuck, and it kind of really got us going. And you definitely find a connection with people when you all have something to identify you guys or, like, yourself with and your group. And eventually, like, over the course of the season, you know, that's just kind of, like, how we connected with each other. And I think, like, it's really important to have something like that, that you can all connect with. And honestly, I'm not sure how it stuck, but it did. And it's just something that I will never forget from this 2019-year team.
Is that something you guys are going to keep on the tradition as upperclassmen now, bringing in the new class and everything, or is it going to be each new season is kind of a different canvas to be painted?
I think every year just, you know, has to be, or not has to be, but I think every year is going to be different. And now that our seniors are gone, who were a really big impact on our team and really, you know, advocated for that phrase, I guess you could say. Now that they're gone, it's kind of like not the same without them. So I think that we definitely will find something else to identify our team with this year. But yeah, I mean, like I said, every year is different. So there's really you really don't know what you're going to get next year or the next 2 years.
So Coach Bresci always talks about how, again, like each year is different, and the biggest jump is from freshman to sophomore year. Can you just kind of describe, like, your freshman to sophomore year, just, like, the differences, highs and lows, or kind of, like, the best moments?
I think the transition, you know, to freshman to sophomore year was definitely slightly easier, just because when you're a freshman, you're still getting to know everything, and when you're a sophomore, you already know. But I think, you know, one of the difficulties is the fact that, yes, you're not a freshman anymore, but you're also not an upperclassman, so you're kind of just, like, right in the middle. So it's kind of, like, not like you don't know your role, but at the same time, you really don't. You don't really know, like, what you can do, what you can't say. It does make it a little tough to, like, you know, be a leader, but once you figure out, you know, where your place is, everything just becomes a lot easier from there.
Would you say, like, also just your, like, horizons at this school have just, like, broadened, like, interests and friendships or anything? Are you, what's going on socially and just, like, outside of lacrosse, too?
You know, honestly, that's something that I have been trying to explore are my different interests, because, you know, after college, there's no guarantee that you're going to continue pursuing lacrosse. So it is important to find other interests. And to be completely honest, I'm still looking for my interests. I do have, you know, a few hobbies that I like to do. Like, I love art, and at home I love going on hikes and stuff, but it definitely is kind of hard to find different interests, you know, just because growing up, that's all you've known is playing sports, and that's what I've identified with for my entire life. So I am, that is one of my biggest challenges right now, is finding, like, new interests. But, you know, outside of, like, my teammates, I do try to get to know, you know, other people, other athletes, and I think that's also really important, just because, you know, sometimes being around your team, sometimes you just kind of, like, need a break from, you know, talking about lacrosse or just your sport in general, and it's nice to, you know, talk to other people and not talk about your sport, because, like I said, sometimes you just need a break.
Mm-hmm. And you're a Nation United mentor, right?
Yes.
How is that? Like, it's obviously still lacrosse, but how has that kind of broadened your interests and friendships, or, like, what has the impact of that been on you so far?
I think it mostly has, you know, made me realize that I do, you know, make an impact on other people, and what I do does matter to other people, and I personally just, you know, want to do whatever I can to make a path for other people, maybe for them not to follow, but to, like, make their own path off of mine, and just helping the future of lacrosse.
When Nation United first started, I had no idea what it was going to be, and we went to this first tournament in Pennsylvania, and it was, I think it completely changed, like, my outlook on lacrosse, because, like, prior to that, it was all about just kind of just playing and playing as much as possible. But I think once that shifted, like, once I did that, it kind of shifted my perspective as there's so much more than just playing, and, like you said, like, making an impact on people. You know, I had never met any of the guys on the team, and I want to make a good impression of them. And then I also just saw, like, how much the game had spread into just so many different people in different areas from different backgrounds. And now, like, guys who are on my team are playing at Syracuse or a bunch of other places, High Point. So I feel like it's something that's kind of changing the game at the youth level.
Yeah, for sure. which I think like is very important just for the growth of the game. You know, if we want lacrosse to be bigger, we definitely have to spread the game to, you know, not just, you know, one specific group, but to, you know, many different diverse backgrounds as well.
Yeah, and I think that kind of stems from, like, the players. You know, there's definitely the hotbeds like Maryland, New York, are the like a lot of the traditional lacrosse places, but now it's grown everywhere. And it can be kind of intimidating going into that group. So, like, when you were growing up, what was kind of like the support system you had going into lacrosse? And then what do you see now for kids who are, you know, not from traditional areas or from traditional backgrounds who play this sport as for their support systems?
For me, like I said, you know, I got a lot of support from my family, my coaches, my friends. So it was pretty easy for me to transition into lacrosse. I think one of the difficulties for others is, like, they may not have, you know, someone to look up to, or they may not have, like, that big friend group. And it can kind of be intimidating to, you know, go into something where you don't really know much of. And sometimes, like I said, you don't always, others don't really always have that support group. So I think, you know, something that's important is, like, developing, you know, a strong support group from, you know, whether it's your family, your friends, your coaches, like, at least someone, so that way you feel a little bit more comfortable going into something that you don't always know.
What are you kind of doing just, like, individually to be that? Because you, I know you play a ton and are great on the field, like, senior games. Like, what are you doing individually and then kind of with your friends from home and at Carolina to read the game and kind of be that support system for other kids or that role model that kids can look at, especially like Nation United kids?
Individually, I try to reach out to other kids, just, you know, whether it's just messaging them and being like, oh, hey, like, great job, like, I see you're doing great things. Or, you know, just letting them know that if they ever need anything, that they can always contact me. I'm also, you know, coaching on a club team, so that also really helps me be able to give support to others. At Carolina, I just try to, you know, be a role model for others and create a path for them, like I said before.
So you talked about, like, being kind of an ally, and I think that's so big because, like, my parents didn't even know what lacrosse was when we came to New York. They'd never played it. They didn't know anything about it. So a lot of times when I was playing, I felt like I couldn't exactly talk to them about, you know, what was going on, what I was going through, like, how I was growing as a player. And you mentioned your sister played. Who else was kind of your like, mentor? And what was some of the advice they gave you?
It's kind of a tough question to ask, to be honest. Because, I mean, I was in the same situation you were as well. You know, my parents didn't really know much about lacrosse or really, you know, college lacrosse. So I kind of found mentors, I guess you could say, like, within my team, like, since I couldn't really, you know, go home and, like, talk about it. I mean, I could talk about it with my parents, but, like you said, they wouldn't completely understand, you know, where I'm coming from. But I found that mostly within my teammates, just because they did understand what was going on. And just, I also was really into Carolina itself, and I would, you know, watch other you know, big players on the team. And I was like, okay, well, how can I be like them, or how can I do this? So it was definitely a little difficult to find that mentorship, but even though I didn't have the mentorship itself, I, like I said before, I did have a lot of support from my teammates and my coaches, which really helped me out a lot, as well as my family. So
yeah, I feel like the same way. I feel like my biggest mentors came from my coaches, specifically one of my club coaches who lives in town. And he's kind of like a lacrosse junkie. He's a Carolina grad as well. But now that you're coaching Nation United, and all your experiences, what do you think? What do you want your impact to be on the girls that you're going to get to coach this summer and mentor as well?
The biggest impact I want to have on them is just to never limit themselves to, you know, things that they want to do. If they want to do something, then I think that they should go for it, and to have confidence in whatever you do. I think that a lot of the time, you know, people still in high school or around that age don't really have a lot of confidence in themselves. So something that I really want to help build is confidence in each individual to be able to pursue whatever they would like to pursue.
And the Diversity Inside Lacrosse with Nation United podcast continues with a panel discussion with a trio of players who are going to share their perspective on what it is like to be an athlete in this sport that is predominantly white and has maybe not the most common road to the highest levels of lacrosse. And we begin with Mark Ellis, a former Stony Brook and Hofstra lacrosse player who has moved on to the professional ranks. And I think, you know, Mark, I want to begin by just asking what I think is one of the most interesting and general questions that anybody can answer. For a sport that in the United States is not one of the biggest four, everybody's path to the game is unique and revealing. So let me start by asking you that. How did you come to learn what lacrosse was and get involved?
I think it started in middle school. I didn't have a sport to play in the spring. And my buddies kind of told me to play lacrosse. Never heard of lacrosse. So I bet my family's from Ohio. I grew up playing football and wrestling. So lacrosse is a brand new thing for me. I actually started playing lacrosse as a pole, and then I turned to a mini later in my career. And I didn't know what it was. My buddies played it, and I was like, I hang out with my buddies most of the time. And for the first time experience, like, an athletic career, I didn't know what I was doing playing lacrosse. That was a big mistake for me. Not a mistake, but a learning curve for me. Kind of shocking, not understanding anything, and not having one to play with me back home. My family lives in a different part of the area, so all my friends didn't know what lacrosse was. It was very expensive. My coach gave me everything. Because of my friends had everything new, so me coming to this world, I was behind track because everybody started earlier than me, and I didn't look the part. So that was a big thing for me. But after a lot of practice, obviously, it took me this far. But it's a bumpy road. I wanted to quit a lot of times. I was on the combo mix team, the not so good team. So I had every down the book. I had every reason to quit. I ran track. I was pretty good at track. Went to state and track in high school and count with the track. So me sticking with it kind of worked down the end. I'm here. I'm playing the professional lacrosse. I never thought I would do it, but it's a blessing.
And Ariel Ramirez, you're also from Long Island. Sophomore, just finished your sophomore season, right? Playing for Hartford. Or I'm sorry, are you going to be a sophomore?
I'm a rising sophomore.
Very good. Very good. And playing all over the field. I'm interested in what your perception of the game was like when you came to the sport. What was your first impression?
So my first impression of lacrosse was probably, you know, unfortunately, a more common first impression for most athletes of color is like, that's like the white kid's sport. That's really what it looks like. Obviously, with more education, I know it wasn't always like that, but that's what it has come to be now. Today, that's what, you know, it's is the peers. And I think my perception, I didn't expect much because I didn't know what to expect. It was really new to me. As Mark said, I didn't really know what lacrosse was until I was in like the fifth grade. And I was at a new school, predominantly white, and I was new, I was black, I was a girl, and I wanted to make some friends, so I thought I would play lacrosse. So perception, I thought it would be fun, because I'm a kid, and kids have this, like, naivety about them that, you know, we're going to have fun, and I'm going to make friends, and it wasn't, you know, like that in the beginning. It was hard, I didn't really know what I was doing, and I came from a background of track as well. Was a pretty successful track athlete, actually, in middle school, high school. And once I, you know, I had to make the decision what was going to take over, and I decided it was going to be lacrosse, it was a bumpy road. So my perception in the beginning was definitely just like, there's going to be something I'm trying because, you know, I like to try new things. And, you know, it came to be something I had a love for that I realized I could be good at. That's basically just how I ended up sticking with it.
And it's a great story to hear. And Eli Ensor, you're up next with the ball. A recent graduate from Lasseter High School in Georgia, heading to Ohio State as a freshman midfielder this fall. What drew you to lacrosse?
To be quite honest, at first, when I was first signed up, I didn't have a choice. my mom kind of signed me up out of the blue without me knowing, but once I started it and kind of figured out how to catch and throw, what I really liked about it was kind of just the whole, it's almost to me like basketball, like the whole dodging aspect is probably my favorite part. Just, it's like putting on a show. Like whenever I put my helmet on and the rest of my gear, I feel like I'm in the NBA, like out here dribbling through guys. But what really makes it fun for me and what keeps me going with it is just the fun that you can have on the field with all your friends and all the entertaining and exciting things that you can do with your stick and your feet. And it's a really exciting sport. It's fast paced, and that's kind of what kept me going with it.
Both Ariel and Mark mentioned that there were times that, you know, they thought maybe this wasn't for them and that, you know, they had to kind of push through the wall when maybe they wanted to quit. Were you ever confronted with any of those moments? And if so, how'd you handle them?
All the time. A few times this season as well. I don't think it stops ever. What I do in those moments is I just have to remember, like, you're in it for something more. Like, for me, every time I play, I'm playing for my brother and everyone else who's younger than me and is of color that more recently has more of a chance in the sport. But for me, I just have to remember what I'm playing for. And whenever I would have a bad game and feel like quitting, I just think about everyone else that I'm playing for, all the kids that DM me asking about my workouts and everything else. So,
Ariel, you mentioned that the preconception of coming to a sport that was played by predominantly white athletes impacted your first impression. Now, having played the game, how do you describe the experience of, you know, being a black lacrosse player?
I think the experience, you know, like I said, it wasn't something that as a 9-year-old I was expecting to walk into, because it was hard. And, you know, 9-year-olds don't really think that anyone is going to treat them differently because they're different. So walking into that in the beginning was difficult, and it, like Eli kind of mentioned, like, it never stops. You always have these moments where you're going to feel like you want to quit. And, you know, maybe for him, they were different reasons, but I very constantly felt ostracized, until actually this year, my first year playing on Hartford Women's Lacrosse, I was the only person of color on every team that I was on. So that would be like 3 different teams. And, you know, it was hard. I think a big part of any activity or anything that you do is having a community. And I didn't feel like I had one. And these were people that were like my teammates. So that was difficult. How that's changed now is it started with me having to change my perspective. Like you said, I had all these preconceptions about this sport. And, you know, they proved to be somewhat accurate. But not everyone is the same everywhere you go, and that's just something that I always have to keep in mind. Even in my first year at Hartford, I sort of had a wall up in my first semester. You know, I wasn't very, I wasn't giving myself into the experience. And once I did that, I was able to not only form relationships, but really fall deeper in love with something that I love to do. Because, you know, I used to play lacrosse in spite of, you know, not wanting to go to practice. I wanted to practice for lacrosse, but I didn't want to be around my team a lot of the time. But now it's different. Now I love every aspect of it. So changing my perspective had a lot to do with just changing my outlook, because I can never change what other people think or how other people feel about me. I could change how I react to certain situations. So that's kind of how it's evolved.
Mark, one of the things about being able to manage these types of situations, you know, when you're trying to accomplish something, you're trying to move forward, you know, oftentimes one of the most beneficial tools or helpful tools is an ability to focus on something else for a period of time. When you take a break, when you move your mind onto something else, you can kind of press the reset button. What was that for you, and how important was it to, when you felt like you were hitting a wall, be able to redirect your focus and find some relief somewhere else, even if temporarily?
I think for me, it was a big part of my family. No one in my family played lacrosse before, so me going back home, my mom, my stepdad, and my grandma, before she passed away, my grandpa, they never asked me about lacrosse. They didn't know anything about lacrosse. They asked me how that played, and now I was in the discussion. So being at home, I felt comfortable. I didn't think I was being judged. My family was judging me based on anything I played, but they had no idea. They wonder how well I did and how I felt. So my family was a big support system for me. They just understand, like, just you're doing well, and that's all they needed from me. That's all they wanted from me. So for me, that and being around my grandma before she passed away, I was in prep school when she passed away, kind of took me a step back, but I didn't realize how important family really is. It's bigger than the cross. I always say everything happens for a reason. So you really understand that we're placed in these positions for certain reasons. Just to realize that it's a special moment to be African American playing lacrosse. Guys came before us, guys like Jim Brown, guys like Christmas, Woodson, Harrison, they paved the way. And I feel like I'll be doing the wrong thing for not doing that. I think for the first time in the last 2 years at Hofstra, I kind of grown into myself to say, kind of go around the norm, not around the norm, but be more of myself personality-wise. I'm being outspoken before, I wasn't really recognized for who I was as an athlete lacrosse-wise. And when I got to Hofstra and being voted captain within 6 months of me being at the transferring was a big step for me. And after that recognition, a lot of more views and more confidence came within me, and more people started looking up to me, black and white. So me, I felt I had to stand up and just grow through that and just rely on my family more than anything. Those are guys who do football, track, and lacrosse is another thing I was playing. So my family was the biggest thing for me.
Ariel, you mentioned before we press record that you're an avid dancer and that it's an aspect of your identity, I guess. I have kind of two separate questions. The first is similar to the one that I asked Mark, which is, what does that provide for you? And then I guess on the other side, what does it do in terms of helping you develop as a lacrosse player?
So yeah, I did mention I love to dance. I danced for like 14 years straight, and then athletics kind of just became a bigger part of my life. I had to decide what was more important to me and basically just what was going to take me further. So it was, you know, like it was a sad thing to have to stop dancing and taking class, but, you know, that's always something that you can do. It doesn't cost any money to turn on some music and dance. And that's something that I feel like just reminds me, like, I'm not just a lacrosse player. I wasn't always a lacrosse player because before I was a dancer, but not even just that. Like, I'm more. There's more to me. Yeah, so that's pretty much what it does for me. I know in school, there's a dancing club and they have open classes, and I make sure I'm at them because that's something I enjoy. So I think it's important in general for anyone to indulge in things they enjoy every once in a while, because like we are more than athletes, and it could become, you know, hard on your mental health to just feel like that's everything, and it weighs down on you sometimes. So yeah, I totally love dancing, and it's just something that makes me feel, reminds me of who I am, makes me feel good. So it's different for everyone. But.
And Eli, you mentioned that when you put on a helmet and you try to dodge to space and get your hands free, it feels like you're performing. And I know that's a big part of who you are. Can you explain a little bit more about how you utilize performance in other aspects of your life to flesh out your identity?
Yeah, so I do music, I sing, play guitar, perform, I kind of do all that stuff. For me, I've always tried to keep lacrosse and music kind of separate, but more recently, I've kind of been mixing them a little bit more, like on my Instagram and just being open about it. I used to be really embarrassed with my friends about, you know, telling them I did music, but it's been really amazing because everyone in the LAX community has supported my music and everything. And for me, music, whenever I would get tired of lacrosse, was another way of expressing myself. And it was kind of like a break from lacrosse. And then when I would get tired of doing music, I would go and play some lacrosse as a break from doing music. So like Ariel said, it's always been a really big part of my identity, and I don't plan on ever stopping doing that. But the performance aspect of it, I just love so much because I don't know if it's the attention or what, but just something about it, like affecting people's emotions and just really making them feel something, just makes me happy personally. And it makes me feel fulfilled. Just like in lacrosse, I feel fulfilled when I score a goal or snap someone's ankles or get an assist. So in that aspect, I think my music and my lacrosse are pretty similar in what makes me happy and what makes me keep doing each of them. But yeah, I really love both of them.
So shifting gears a little bit to talk more directly about the experience of being a non-white lacrosse player, how do you characterize, Eli, your experience with coaches, officials, opponents, family members on the sideline, etc., in terms of, you know, the manner in which you're regarded as being a black lacrosse player?
You know what, it's hard because, you know, people are always going to, as a person of color playing lacrosse, kind of try to put you in a certain role or put you in a box. And for me, it's always been, oh, he's really athletic. He's just big, knows how to run. He's really fast. But what's great about Nation was that was the first time I really ever experienced not being labeled as just athletic, because all those dudes are athletic. But at that point, when everyone on the field is athletic, just like in college, you can see who has the stick skills. And at that point, it wasn't really so much he's just an athlete. It was like, he's a solid lacrosse player. He has the hands. He can shoot. But it's been hard with the refs and coaches. It's always been, he's an athlete. He's an athlete. He's an athlete. With the refs, I've had a few experiences, not really great ones, where I've had my stick checked, I think, 3 times a game a few years ago during a playoff. And it's hard because, you know, you're getting picked out on purpose. But at the same time, my stick came out legal every time. And so as long as it has never impeded me, it's never been an issue. So I just have to, for me, I just absorb the hits and keep going. And I think that's just what you have to do. And that's just something as a person of color playing lacrosse that you have to understand, that it's going to be hard and it's going to be difficult, but you just have to be 2-3 steps ahead of everyone and have your mental game just really on point at all times. And you can't let anyone, refs, parents, anyone get in your head. Even with the music, like with that part of my game. I've had a few games where the sideline is yelling, 44, you're gay, et cetera. And that really just makes me giggle because I know all the dudes on my team love my music stuff. And, but I mean, it's just cool to see other people supporting you, but it's always been hard. And I think you just have to remember that. But I just ignore it, shrug it off, and keep going. I think that's what you have to do. That's the only thing you can do.
Ariel, how does Eli's relation of his experience strike your ear? Does that sound familiar?
It sounds extremely familiar. Not only is it, you know, always interesting to me to hear other athletes of color and their, you know, their experiences. It's always amazing to me, the similarities. And just, I can't stress enough what he said about the mindset. It's about how you react to things, because like he said, it does not end. You know, there's always going to be things that stand out more. Quite specifically when he talks about, you know, being put in a box. I remember I was always like, I mentioned I come from a background of running track, so I was more often than not, or almost all the time, the fastest person on my team. And so I would get put in, like, when we were down and, like, I just needed to clear the ball up and then taken out. Or I would get, you know, parents would say triggering things to my family or to me in my face and tell me that I was hairy or something like that, you know, just little microaggressions, trigger words like that. And then there'll be like the more blatant things, like somebody will whisper something nasty in my ear on the field, and then if I say something back, I get thrown out, which happens. So it's all too familiar. And the biggest thing is you really just have to learn how to be bigger. And I don't even think, you know, before I'm an athlete of color, I'm a person of color, I'm a woman of color, and I've been all my life, that's kind of how what you're taught. You have to be bigger. You can't stoop down. And, you know, another thing my parents always told me is you have to work twice as hard to get just as far. And that's always something that I have in the back of my head. You know, I feel like that sometimes. I feel like I work twice as hard and I'm, you know, always two steps behind. But you just have to keep the mindset that you're working for a greater goal and you're not playing for them. You're playing for yourself and for everyone else after you. So, yeah, very similar experience. And you just have to be the owner of your own reality. You can't let people dictate how you're going to feel and how you're going to think, because if I did that, I would not still be playing lacrosse today.
Mark, I wonder if, given that you've got a few years of additional experiences on top of these folks and also, you know, kind of transitioning into that portion of your career where you can take on a leadership role, when you hear stories like this, and I'm sure that you have some level of familiarity with them as well, what do you think, what comes to mind in terms of the ways in which it could get better and whose responsibility it is to make it better?
I think a lot of it is, has come within the players as much as it is, because it's really hard. I'm not saying it's impossible. Really hard to understand if you're not a lacrosse player of color. It's a very hard thing to do. So for us, I think we have to set a standard that we must withhold. I think it's very hard to do that when you're in a room full of people of a different race. So for you, you have to be strong in what you believe in. So those people kind of feel or get that feeling that this is what you stand for, this is who you are. Being in a situation similar to some of these guys, being not playing with other African American until my prep school year and I was 19 years old, was a crazy experience. Kind of actually another African American, because I thought this sport was very so closed off. And having to deal with things that you don't really think you have to worry about so much, like being in the locker room and listening to music, and having some words, not some racial slurs in the music, being in the song and hearing other people say that, like, and having to not just radically jump on them, you know, like, and kind of something like, this is not what we're going to do, this is not what I'm about, things like that. You have to change about one step at a time. Just telling a player like, hey, this is not what we're doing, or it's you have to get inches by inches. You can't take a whole can't buy too much, because I understand it was only a few per team, maybe one or two. So this is the most at Hofstra. It was only three people of color on the team. So it's a 50-man roster. So at that point, you just have to chip away at it. It's a marathon. It's getting better, I would say that, compared to how some other guys been, like obviously Jim Brown and Kyle Harris, some of those guys' situation. And those guys paved the way for us, people like us, so it is getting better. It's not going to happen overnight, but we have to set the example first. And being from where I came from and now being a professional lacrosse player, I think I have a standing that I have to uphold and kind of be a leader in that. So just take an inch by inch. You can't buy more than you do.
Well, and along those lines, you mentioned that you were an elected captain for this Hofstra Pride team this year. What did you learn about, I suppose, how practically to move things forward?
When I became captain, I think this is first of all, that's the number one thing I wanted out of my whole career. I was a captain in high school, proper little club for football. So me being a captain also was an amazing experience. I think I wanted to just open the door to some people who were really closed-minded. I wanted to leave my mark on the team, which I think I did. And having experience, having people thank me for being who I am as a person. I'm not very different. I think I'm very strong what I believe in. I believe in that no matter what you do, you can conquer it. And I think that's what a lot of African-Americans in lacrosse will have, because it's kind of senses us against the world, and kind of sense of that, because there's not many few out there. So anytime I get a chance to come across another player, regardless if I know him or not, I always give him a hand. Always like, hey, this is my Instagram, or this is my phone number. Because it's a small community. It's almost like a guest booklet. Like, only few understand it. So you have to take that experience and kind of embrace it. So for me, I was very gifted to have it. And hopefully some guys on the team now, underclassmen, guys like Sterling Aldridge, guys like that, will one day be captain, understand that it's a gift, especially being a Black African-American captain. So I'm one of the few at Hofstra. I think I'm the second, maybe the second, maybe the first. So it's a big step there. And it's one day at a time. I'm happy for it. And I just want everybody else to understand that being in this community, it's as much as we are the minority, we leave a big mark on the field.
Ariel, I think you're in a position to speak to, I don't know what the right way to frame it is. I almost want to say, like, if this intentional work of improving the experience that non-white athletes have in the game doesn't occur, if the work doesn't happen, then X happens. You know, it's worse, right? So the question is, you know, what is the potential threat? What are the impacts of not trying to affect this change intentionally?
So really, just since I kind of came into myself as a lacrosse player towards the end of my high school career and everything, that was something that was always on my mind. You know, like, how can I make this different for someone coming after me? How could I be the person that I didn't have to someone else? So I think the danger that, you know, looms over not, you know, actively going out and trying to affect change in this sport is just that it's not progressive in this day and age. You know, it seems almost weird for me to say that I am the only person of color on any team in any sport. You know, it seems odd, because as we are the minority, we're not, you know, we're everywhere. We're here. And growing up, I thought I was the only one. I never saw people. I'd go to a tournament of almost like, you know, 40 teams. That's over, I don't even know how many kids. And I would see like two people that looked like me. And, you know, that's dangerous, because that's so discouraging for someone who might think, you know, I want to pick up a stick or I want to play this sport. You know, it wasn't for me at the time, because I was playing for almost the wrong reasons. I was playing because I wanted other people to like me. And then once I started realizing that I liked it, it started becoming less about them and more about myself. And I would hope that another young athlete of color would come across this sport and see representation. That's one of the biggest things I talk about all the time. Representation is so important in inspiring or just lighting a fire in somebody. It makes someone feel so able to see someone who looks like them, someone who they can relate to doing what they want to do. So, I mean, it's, and I see it happening in certain places and I see it growing. It just needs to continue. You know, progress is progress. And as fast or slow as it may be, it just needs to really reach, you know, higher places, because I see it in some communities and I don't see it many in others. And for some people, it's daunting to go out and try something new. So when I go into Queens with the Long Island Urban Lacrosse Coach and we have a free clinic and we provide free sticks and only three kids come, it's upsetting. But we know at the end of the day, it's because, you know, this is a foreign thing to them. And that could be scary to people. So those three kids come, it's an accomplishment. So I think just progress in any sense is a great accomplishment, and as long as it continues, you know, I see no threats to the sport, but the danger is in not growing and not diversifying.
Eli, as you look forward, what do you imagine? What is the ideal? What is the goal? How do you want lacrosse to look, say, when you're done playing?
What's been really interesting for me has been just seeing it in recent years and seeing how much it's exploded in different communities. And I think that will continue to happen with everything that everyone's been doing. When I look forward, you know what? I don't have any expectation of what I think it will look like or anything. I just hope it will reach more people and it'll make someone have more fun or have someone focus on one thing rather than something that can destroy their life. I'm just excited because in the past few years since I've been playing, since sixth grade, I've seen more and more people from a diverse group of backgrounds with different experiences, not necessarily just people of color, but people from poor areas or a lot of different places just picking up lacrosse. And with the international games, it's been really cool. And I think just continuing on this path over the years, I think lacrosse could be one of the big four sports like football, basketball, baseball, all those sports. I think people say it all the time, like lacrosse is the fastest game on two feet. It's the quickest growing game in the entire world. And that is true. And I think as it's going in that direction, the more people from different areas with different ideas that we can bring into the sport, I think that's just as great as it can get. And I'm really excited personally to see what's going to happen. And I just, like I said, the more people we bring in with different ideals, I think the better the sport will be in the future.
Well, Mark, Ariel, Eli, we really appreciate your time and insight on the Diversity Inside Lacrosse podcast with Nation United. As always, we appreciate your time. We look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yes, sir.
Hello, this is Jeremy Audrey, president of Nation United Foundation.
And this is Brian Dawson, president of Nation United Lacrosse.
We'd like to thank our guests in this episode of Diversity Inside Lacrosse with Nation United for their time and valuable insights.
And we'd also like to thank Terry Foy and Inside Lacrosse for providing this platform and supporting the diversity movement.
You can support this podcast and the movement by following us on Instagram at Nation United Foundation.
You can also support our ambassadors by following our men's team on Instagram at Nation United Lats and our women's team at Nation United WLats.
This podcast is powered by Nation United Foundation and Inside Lacrosse with the goal of promoting diversity in sports while inspiring today's athletes and tomorrow's leaders.
Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.